the reign of the Emperor Titus, the son of Vespasian, was short, just a little over 2 years, but boy, was it eventful. And for once, these events have little to do with the emperor. By all accounts, Titus was actually a decent leader, but rather, it was Mother Nature that battered Italy, then Rome, and killed tens of thousands of people. First, the famous eruption of Vesuvius, the volcano that buried the cities of Pompeii and Herculaneum. And then a major fire broke out in Rome less than a year later. Finally, just a few months after that, a plague that at least one source claims killed 10,000 Romans in just a single day in the capital city. But for those who thought these deadly natural disasters were the worst that could happen under the new dynasty began by Vespasian, they were wrong. Because as we'll see on this episode, the Emperor Titus was soon succeeded by perhaps the Pax Romana's most infamous of emperors. Stay tuned for this one. Episode 26, Vesuvius, Pompeii, and the Short-Lived Titus. When Titus took over as emperor from his father Vespasian in AD 79, it would mark the first time that the natural son of an emperor succeeded him in office. All the transfers of power that we've talked about on this podcast from Augustus all the way up until Nero had been through adoption, not the succession of father to natural son. And those successions from Nero to Vespasian were straight up violent coups. But Vespasian, despite making plenty of enemies, secured sufficient power to die of natural causes at an advanced old age. And that's about the best a Roman emperor could hope for. As you know from last time, Vespasian left behind two sons. His eldest son, Titus, was made emperor outright. He didn't have to share equal power with his younger brother, Domitian. Instead, Domitian would be named as his older brother's heir. And this was a duty that he would be called upon to serve much sooner than Titus must have wanted. Titus was made emperor on June of AD 79, and yet by October of that same year, the first of three major natural disasters erupted. And yes, I mean erupted, literally. Overlooking the Bay of Naples, the mountain Vesuvius smoldered, and smoked, and the earth began to shake. But at least initially, these earthquakes were not going to cause panic. Even today, small earthquakes in this part of Italy are common. But this time was different, and we have a single surviving eyewitness account of the eruption of Vesuvius that followed. And this account reaches us through two letters to the Roman senator Tacitus. Tacitus was a historian, and I've quoted him quite a few times already on this podcast. He wrote the Annals. Well, Tacitus was friends with a man named Pliny, and Pliny just happened to be on the other side of the Bay of Naples when the mountain finally blew. Pliny's letters give a play-by-play account of the eruption of Vesuvius. First, the small earthquakes that nobody really worried too much about, but then, the night before the eruption, a violent and long-lasting series of earthquakes shook the entirety of the Bay of Naples. Whole buildings that were near Pliny were tottering. Carriages on flat street surfaces were rocking back and forth. And the quakes were so terrifying to Pliny and his mother, who was staying with him, that they decided to stay in the same room all night and just look out and watch the sea and the land shake. Eventually, the Mediterranean waters pulled back from the shore so suddenly that fish and coral and other sea life ended up exposed on dry land. This is the telltale description of a tsunami. And in the night, fire shot forth from the mountain in the distance, and a thick cloud of smoke and ash made visibility impossible. This darkness, Pliny says in his letter, came in like a rolling wave down the mountain. Quote, This was not the darkness of a moonless or cloudy night, but it was just as if the lamps had been put out in a windowless room. That's Pliny's letters. Pliny then relates the tragic tale of panicked crowds in the dark, rushing this way and that, of shrieking women and wailing children, of men calling out for their loved ones, and in the thick darkness, it was impossible for anyone to find each other. I wonder how many people ended up dying alone, maybe even just a few feet from their loved ones, who they could never find in such bleak darkness. Well, the eruption lasted 2 days, and the cities of Pompeii and Herculaneum were swallowed by the mountain. To this day, casts of the dead, men, women, and children, can still be seen in the cities. Just shy of 2,000 bodies have been found, and those are the bodies that have been found. Obviously, there were more victims than just that. And for Pliny, the destruction of Vesuvius's eruption was personal. His uncle, the famous natural philosopher Pliny the Elder, like many of the casualties in the vicinity of Vesuvius, perished from the volcano in some way. We don't exactly know how. Did he suffocate to death in the poisonous cloud? Did he get crushed by the falling debris? Did he blister and burn in the heat? Or did he simply panic to death? The Emperor Titus, only recently put into power, rushed down to the area in the aftermath to help and to heal and to lead in a time when he was desperately needed. But while he was away from Rome, once again, that city, just as it had done under Nero, caught fire. But unlike the fire under Nero, we don't know a lot about the inferno under Titus. We don't have an eyewitness account, and we don't have archaeological evidence. The bits and pieces of information we do have suggest that Rome burned for at least 3 days and three nights. The senator Cassius Dio, writing over 100 years later, blamed this fire for the destruction of numerous temples and baths and theaters and libraries. Just think, Vespasian had spent so much money beautifying the city, only for it to be destroyed just a few years after he died. And unfortunately for Vespasian, the most significant of the destroyed structures was his own new temple to Jupiter Optimus Maximus. The destruction was evidently so great that Titus himself lamented that his obligation to repair the damage, was his job after all as emperor, would leave him personally bankrupt. So that's one disaster, and then a second. Well, a third disaster struck Rome that same year. Again, this is AD 80. But this time, it wasn't a volcano or a fire. It was a disease, one which several sources claim was the worst Rome had ever experienced. The Christian writer Jerome, who wrote several centuries after the events, offered a death toll of 10,000 victims a day. Now, that number is almost certainly exaggerated, but it does speak to a serious epidemic in a city already ravaged by fire in the midst of a region racked by brimstone. Titus, no doubt utterly exhausted by this point, threw himself on the mercy of Rome's gods. The biographer Suetonius leaves behind this short comment on the emperor's response. Quote, "For curing the plague and diminishing the force of the epidemic, there was no aid, human or divine, which Titus did not employ, searching for every kind of sacrifice and all kinds of medicines." That's Suetonius's Life of Titus. Most Romans would have believed the plague and likely the fire and volcanic eruption were not mere coincidences of nature, but rather these would have been interpreted as signs of deep divine wrath against the city and maybe even its emperor. If there was a time when even the most reasonable person in leadership could be expected to panic, this was it. But sources for the reign of Titus almost universally praise the emperor for making wise and caring decisions on behalf of his people during these dark days. At great cost to himself, Titus paid out of his own pocket to rebuild. Now, to be fair, he also confiscated the estates of men who had died in the Vesuvian eruption and who had left no heirs. I guess no emperor is perfect after all. But beyond dealing equitably with the disasters, Tiberius showed a distinct lack of the paranoia and the murderousness of several of the previous emperors we've looked at on this podcast. Titus refused to hold trials for treason. He wouldn't even hear the accusations of informers against senators. And no senator's property was confiscated, nor was any senator put to death. Titus really seemed to have both the character and the social and political capital to be one of Rome's greatest emperors. But alas, it was not meant to be. At the age of just 41 years old, still unmarried and without any children, Titus would die suddenly and unexpectedly just over 2 years into his reign. Now, the general view is that some natural cause was behind his death. A fever or an illness of some kind, perhaps even the pestilence that had just killed so many people in Rome. But there is a minority view that something far more sinister robbed Rome of its most promising emperor since the Pax Romana first dawned. The horrors of the man that followed Titus, his younger brother Domitian, are such that many, including a few ancient writers, wonder if Domitian murdered his own brother Titus. Adding fuel to the rumors are two clues in the ancient sources. First, both Cassius Dio and the biographer Suetonius claim that Domitian was party to a plot against Titus's life, a plot that never quite materialized, but Titus, good-natured as he was, couldn't find it in himself to exile or execute his own brother, and so he let Domitian live. And the second clue is the strange final words that Titus was reported to utter just before he died. Quote, "I have made but one mistake," the emperor said. Titus died before he could reveal what his one regret was, but some believe it was allowing his brother Domitian to live after discovering him in that plot. This would, of course, suggest that Titus knew Domitian was behind his death. But whatever Titus meant by this mysterious comment is lost to time, and with his death, Domitian took hold of the reins of power. This new emperor, as we'll see next time, would rival Caligula and Nero as Rome's worst leader of all time. And Domitian's reign was long, a full 15 years, plenty of opportunity to earn a reputation as a paranoid, murderer, megalomaniac, and outright tyrant. Upon his death in AD 96, Domitian would become the third emperor to have his memory formally erased by the Senate. What kind of man could elicit such a severe response? Find out on the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exacore. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.